It's 6 past 12 and 80 degrees in Santa Fe as that noon continues from KSFR News on Thursday, June 20th. Coming up this hour, we're waiting for results of a court hearing held this morning over the legal tender restaurant in Lamy. Our reporter was there earlier and we'll have a report. An unusual series of lectures coming up in Santa Fe. Subject, arts and the law. And what will be the fate of the lesser prairie chicken in New Mexico? I'm Bill Dupuy, back with those stories, 60 Seconds with Christopher Hagen, and more after we check headlines. We're awaiting the results of this morning's hearing over a dispute between the legal tender restaurant and the Lamy Railroad and History Museum. KSFR's reporter at the courthouse says arguments were at times emotional. Operators of the restaurant claim they were unfairly evicted from the restaurant by the museum's board. Questions include whether the restaurant outgrew its space at the nonprofit museum in Lamy, and also the financial contribution made to the museum from the restaurant's proceeds. A report from our reporter at the courthouse coming up. Managers of the Santa Fe National Forest say they'll close the forest to visitors completely beginning Monday. The only exception will be the Rio Chama Scenic Corridor. The ongoing dry conditions had earlier forced closure of a part of the forest, but now they say the fire danger is too high to leave more of it open. A drop in water levels may force Albuquerque to stop diverting water from the Rio Grande for its drinking supply. The water utility serving the state's most populous area said they would then be dependent on traditional wells. Santa Fe has also been drawing water from the Rio Grande, but operators of the Buckman Direct Diversion Project have not answered KSFR's request for information on any possible closure. A 60-year-old California man has pleaded guilty to federal charges of trying to sell jewelry that he claimed was authentically Native American. Prosecutors say Andrew Alvarez also tried to pass himself off as Indian at several art shows in Santa Fe. Alvarez has been sentenced to 90 months of probation, followed by a year of supervised release. A City Hall panel is discussing whether the Santa Fe mayor's job should be full-time. The New Mexican reports that the Wednesday meeting of the city's Charter Review Commission focused on possible changes to what they call a weak mayor's system. At present, the mayor votes only in case of a tie with city council. One of the proposals is that he have a vote in every issue being discussed. The proposal being discussed also would prohibit the mayor from holding another job while in office. The commission meets again next week on that issue. New Mexico health officials are waiting for word from Washington on their request for a $20 million grant to be used to enroll people under the new Affordable Care Act. Enrollment is required to begin October 1st. Ron Pollock is head of the health advocacy group Families USA. He says the new health law will be a particular benefit to New Mexico.
New Mexico and Texas, for many years, have had the highest percentage of their population uninsured. So for a place like New Mexico, this is a big deal because they're going to be significant numbers of people who felt out in the cold in terms of health coverage are now going to get the help they need so that health coverage is affordable. And so I think New Mexico is probably one of the top states in the country that's going to feel the benefit of the Affordable Care Act.
The New Mexico Realtors Association says residential sales increased in May and are about 12% ahead of last year. 16 of the state's 33 counties showed increases in May. Home prices also improved, growing more than 4%. The little town of Magdalena, just west of Socorro, is dying of thirst. Its only water well has dried up, and residents are being allocated bottle water by the case, one case per person every other day. The local laundromat has been ordered to cut back its seven-day-a-week schedule to 2 days. To help out, the Albuquerque Police Department is collecting donated bottles of water for residents of the small town, population just under 1,000. In weather for Santa Fe, hot and dry today and in the days ahead. 90s for highs today. Right now, 80. On Wall Street checking stocks, everything is down. The Dow Jones is off 230 points at 14,881. It's 12:11 at noon from KSFR News. Observers of a restaurant dispute in Lamy say the two sides are nothing if not colorful. That seems to have played out in court in Santa Fe, where the operators of the Legal Tender restaurant have taken the Lamy History and Railroad Museum to court over a fight about should the restaurant remain at the museum. KSFR's Marianne Cox was there and has this report.
We've heard opening arguments from both the lawyers representing Legal Tender, which closed on May 31st but would like to remain open, and we've heard arguments from the opposing attorneys, those representing the Railroad and History Museum, which believe that the restaurant has formally and finally closed and have no interest in seeing it reopen. As an outsider and listening to arguments from both sides, it seemed very, very personal from the beginning. Lawyers on behalf of Legal Tender have largely argued on the merits of allowing the restaurant to stay open, and lawyers on the opposing side have largely been making very personal attacks and arguments about the legalities and accuracy of affidavits and the process that we're going through today. Very difficult to follow if you're not a lawyer. But it almost seems like two different sets of arguments are going on, one about legal process and one about the viability of the Legal Tender restaurant. Help us, our listeners, understand what's going on and tell us who you are.
My name is Karen Hurd, and I'm a volunteer at the restaurant. I've been a volunteer since they opened in 2012. My husband and I moved here 3 years ago from Alabama, and we wanted to find a place that we could make a difference. And we found it at the Legal Tender.
So what's going on today? Help us dissect what's going on and what is the result that those representing the restaurant want to see from today's hearing.
We have put our heart and soul into that restaurant. It means the world to us. We have worked hard. We've done the things that the board should have done, that they did not take responsibility for. We had to do that in order to keep the restaurant open.
That means maintaining compliance with state and federal and local regulations.
So we have all worked as hard as we could work. Cindy and Johnny have kept the place going. We have all learned, we have all grown to know each other and love each other and love the place.
How viable of an idea is it to continue the operation of the restaurant with such a hostile owner of the property? And there is no question that the museum owns the property.
Well, it's been fine until one of the board members comes into the restaurant and causes the problems. Other than that, we all have a good time. We listen to the music. We're there for the community.
And so what are you looking for as a result from today's hearing, which again is to allow the operation of the restaurant at some point in the future to continue?
We just want to go back to the way we were. Let us run the restaurant. Let us make the museum money. And then they can take that money and make the upgrades that are necessary to keep the place open.
I'm also speaking today with...
This is Anna Sahosky.
And Anna, tell us what the end game is here. What is it that you think will happen next, and what are you hoping happens next?
It's hard to say because of the complexity of the arguments this morning what the result will be, but what we want to see happen is a mediated agreement between both sides. Maybe not formally mediated, but getting two sides together to come to an agreement. There was a proposal that Johnny spoke to on the witness stand today about how he wanted to change the concessionaire agreement to make it more profitable for the museum. We would like to revisit that because we think that the two institutions, Legal Tender and the Railroad and History Museum, can and should coexist for the community of Lamy, for the community of Santa Fe and El Dorado, and indeed the state of New Mexico. This is a very important couple of nonprofits that are really putting forward the history of Lamy. through both the restaurant and the museum. And there's no reason why we cannot come to some sort of agreement. Ideally, that's where we would like to go.
But relations have really deteriorated since April, mid-April. Are they irreparable at this point?
I can't speak to that. That would be a question for Johnny and Cindy Jednak. I think that there's always an opportunity for compromise and negotiation, and I would hope that the outcome of this case, regardless of what the outcome of this case, whether the TRO is upheld and turned into a permanent injunction or it is not, that we can still come together to come to some sort of agreement.
And of course, TRO is a temporary restraining order, which the legal tender restaurant is requesting that this court act favorably on, while the opposing side, the museum, is suggesting that the entire case ought to be dismissed.
That's correct.
Among other reasons, because there is no written agreement about the concessionaires, that the terms of the concessionaire agreement are really contained within meeting minutes of board meetings.
Yes.
But let's just take a short-term look forward. The hearing goes on even as we speak, so we don't know how the judge will rule today. What is your plan B should the judge decide in favor of the museum?
The Friends of the Legal Tender, which is a newly created nonprofit to defend the Legal Tender restaurant, filed a complaint with the Attorney General's office with 30 members of the community from Laney, El Dorado, and Santa Fe yesterday to investigate the Railroad and History Museum for their financial and board improprieties. So that was filed yesterday, and that will be the next step in the process.
So it doesn't look like it's coming together closer. It looks like there are still legal actions pending of a hostile nature. I don't want to take you guys away anymore from the courtroom because the testimony is actually riveting for this issue. I want to thank both of you for talking to KSFR today, and we will continue to follow how the action takes place today, what the judge decides today, and what happens next. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
KSFR's Marion Cox at the new district courthouse with that report, 12:18 on At Noon. Well, it's no secret Santa Fe is a major national center for the arts, and in today's world there are times when legal issues arrive in the business surrounding art. An innovative lecture and discussion series in Santa Fe hopes to clear up confusion in the dealings between artists and galleries and customers. I asked City Councilor and Attorney Peter Ives to tell us more about the series of lectures beginning on June 25th at the Community Convention Center.
You are certainly correct, and hopefully folks are looking in the newspaper because I've seen them advertised. The one that I will be participating in relates to the gallery-artist relationship, and that's coming up on June 25th, looking forward to doing that. I had done it once before, I think about a year and a half ago, sponsored through Lawyers for the Arts, a group that is headed up by Kalia Koss here in Santa Fe over at the Bennett Firm, and she has a passion for the law and the art, which got her to organize that entity, which provides legal services to artists and others, especially in contexts where they may not be able to necessarily afford the full charge that attorneys do charge.
Well, let's take consignment agreements then. Are they difficult?
They can be very tricky because it will involve a gallery, an artist, and also a patron. Often a patron who is looking for a work of art by an artist may want something in particular, and of course artists are known for their creative bent, and sometimes those desires come into conflict where a patron might be wanting something in particular and an artist might find their creativity taking them in a different direction, and you can run into a few problems in that context.
It would be hard to find a place more suited to what you're talking about than Santa Fe.
It's supposed to be the second or third largest art market in the United States, depending on who you talk to when. And while I've never fully understood those metrics, I will say that certainly one of the things that brought me to Santa Fe about a little over 30 years ago was the fact that arts played a pivotal role in our community and were really part of our everyday life as opposed to something shunted off to the side. So Santa Fe has the benefit of being an incredibly conscious art market and town and city, and you see that displayed all over the city.
Also on the agenda is censorship. Tell us about that.
It is one that occasionally comes into conflict. Public sentiment sometimes certainly runs afoul of an artist's creative endeavor. I think everybody here remembers the case of the Our Lady of Guadalupe dressed in flowers, and of course the cover of the Reporter. I think not today, but last Wednesday or the Wednesday before. That I think is an important part of the discussion, and that includes everything from, who's responsible for what type of derivative works can be made for purposes of marketing to who's potentially covering taxes on sales. We know Congress is looking at various measures in that regard. So, the series is free and open to the public, and we do hope that the crowd will be overflowing because they are interesting topics and important ones here in the city of Santa Fe.
City Councilor and lawyer Peter Ives on At Noon from KSFR News. That series begins at the city's Community Art Gallery at the Convention Center June 25th, and there'll be one a month after that. 12:23 now on At Noon. Since the late 1990s, the lesser prairie chicken, a species of bird found in New Mexico and four other states, has been listed as endangered. There are some people, like Governor Martinez, who no longer feel the species is indeed threatened. Joining us now on the line, Karen Stockdale is Executive Director of Audubon New Mexico. Tell us a bit about the issue surrounding the lesser prairie chicken.
And generally, there are a lot of issues with the conservation of the lesser prairie chicken. It has an extremely limited population and a very restricted distribution. There's only about 37,000 birds left in the world, and they're really in five states of the Great Plains, in New Mexico, Colorado, Kansas, Texas, and Oklahoma.
Now, the governor is saying there's no need to protect the lesser prairie chicken. What do you make of that?
Well, the five states have been working very hard to come up with a conservation plan in advance of this proposed rule and to be able to show conservation measures that would basically say that the populations are stable and we don't need to list the species. And what we know, and particularly with the drought, is that the troubles for the lesser prairie chicken are really far from over. And that if these states and private landowners and some of the federal agencies like the NRCS, the Natural Resources Conservation Service, and even conservation groups can come together working with private landowners, and if implemented, her statements would be right. But we're still really in advance of a lot of the work that needs to be done. So we want to call attention to some of those steps that are really going to increase their population and ensure that they are viable long term.
Anyone else saying it shouldn't be on the endangered list?
Well, this is a political football, so to speak, at the moment. And, of course, the New Mexico Game and Fish Department, as part of the governor's administration, has made very similar comments. And then actually both of our senators have recently asked for an extension on this proposed rule from the Fish and Wildlife Service to consider more of the planning at the state level.
With the public comment period closed, do you have any other options left to make your argument?
Audubon does play a role in affecting things. Part of it is in some of the advocacy work. But we do partner, actually, with all of these different agencies. I actually just returned from a meeting in Colorado where the Great Plains Landscape Conservation Collaborative, really looking at a lot of the conservation issues across the Great Plains, where all the agencies and non-governmental entities like Audubon come together and talk about the future, how we can really address some of the science gaps and needs for data in research, and be able to really have a positive influence.
When it comes, the ruling will be just from Fish and Wildlife?
That is correct. So the Fish and Wildlife Service will take all the different comments that have been submitted, and right now the timeline is by September, they will issue their findings on this proposed rule and decide whether or not to list this species under the Endangered Species Act. If they decide not to, they could. They have a whole number. We always hear about warranted but precluded. They have a whole number of possible ways that they can address this. They can defer to a little bit later, or they may decide to tell some of the states and some of the different entities that they've got some thresholds or population numbers, some goals that they've got to reach. This bird was first listed as a candidate for listing in 1999. So it's been a little while that we've all been watching this species.
Looking ahead, what if it is removed from the endangered list?
There are other ways, and often we hear about in the media how much the Endangered Species Act is like a lightning rod, and that there are groups that sue and sue the Fish and Wildlife Service to be able to call more attention to a species or to reopen a case, so to speak. There are those kinds of possibilities. But Audubon has really seen that collaborative partnerships have tended to work a lot better, and even at times with partners that may be a little bit reluctant, but being able to have the conversations to really see good conservation measures get implemented seems to make even a more tremendous difference. But one of the tools in the toolbox is the ability to sue.
Sounds like it's been a lot of work.
We do applaud the states that have been working on this range-wide conservation plan, and essentially only in the last couple of years have all the states come together and realized things like they need to actually do their surveys with the same methodology. And last year was the first time there was an aerial survey that was statistically valid and looked at the whole range-wide population. Efforts like that, NRCS's Lesser Prairie Chicken Initiative, some of the additional efforts from stakeholders, particularly working on conservation easements or incentives for private landowners, those are measures that we really think are taking a step in the right direction. It's just it's only been very recently, and we need to see a lot more happen.
Okay. Karen Stockdale, Audubon, New Mexico, many thanks. At noon from KSFR News, checking news from elsewhere now, questioning of 40 potential jurors in the George Zimmerman trial is over in Florida as lawyers prepare to whittle down the group and select the final panel. The judge gave lawyers a lunch break to prepare a list of potential jurors they want nixed. Each side can strike up to 10 jurors as long as it's not for race, ethnicity, or gender. They're trying to seat a jury of 6 plus 4 alternatives. The break came after Zimmerman's defense attorney spent the morning discussing with the group legal concepts such as reasonable doubt, self-defense, and the importance of keeping biases out of the courtroom. Zimmerman is on trial in the shooting death of black teenager Trayvon Martin. They're not exactly calling it a health donut, but Dunkin' Donuts says it plans to offer gluten-free donuts later this year. For about 1% of the population with a condition known as celiac disease, even small amounts of gluten can prompt severe discomfort. But others without this condition can still have mild reactions to gluten, and many have adopted gluten-free diets in recent years, leaving the fast food industry scrambling to 80 degrees in Santa Fe, 91 for highs today, not a drop of rain in sight for days ahead. It's 24 now before 1 o'clock on At Noon from KSFR News, and we have an extra 60 seconds for this old curmudgeon.
I was leasing a 2010 Corolla, and my lease was about to expire, like in 3 days. I didn't know what to do, but I decided to get another lease. It took me 45 minutes to take everything out of the old car and put it in the new car. 45 minutes! I then spent the next 2 nights going through everything to decide what I could throw away. It was embarrassing, and I was by myself. Magazines, 2 years old, books I'd forgotten I owned, 3-year-old receipts, and a first aid kit that I must have purchased in a long-ago Boy Scout moment. You know, be prepared. I opened the first aid kit. You couldn't open the Band-Aids. The Tylenol and burn cream expired in 2002. The antiseptic wipes expired in 2001. And the antibiotic cream expired in 2000. Yeah, it's good advice to always be prepared. Just don't be expired. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.